Hastite Fiedi, swordmaster and troop leader, bowed to the chairman's box, then to either end of the grand, where the notable guests of state and industry were seated, and finally, that cold chill down the spine which this required movement always brought, turned his back on the most dangerous man in his universe to salute the mortal representative of that Holy One who was even more dangerous, having dominion over all universes.
Protocol was invented by the devil for the ensnaring of innocent hearts.
Not that his was innocent. He had been debriefed by his superior in the order and had still to face confession. From the corner of his eye, Hastite saw the doors open in each corner, dark mouths. In each, a gleaming figure poised in one of the attitudes. The first figure in each doorway stalked forward, and behind it, a second. Eight now, each demonstrating one of the attitudes, a full square. Saber dancing had its roots in ancient days, long before the first men left Earth. More than one sword-bearing culture had its sword and knife dances, and more than one had used them as training. But not until the Benignity had the old threads wound into such a line of life and death as this. Step and step, the figures moved forward, in toward the open space, where Hastite waited. Four were female, four were male. Four belonged to the sun. Pure gold, copper red, rich bronze, and brass. Four belonged to the moon. Silver, steel, lead, platinum. And he, the dance's shadow, gleamed obsidian in the light. The gleaming figures had formed the circle, with him in the center. The Spanish circle, he knew from his studies, with its elaborate figures. He turned slowly, enjoying as much as the chairman, he was sure, those fine-tuned bodies beneath the gleaming paint. Unlike his mask, theirs were transparent, invisible to all but those who knew exactly where to look. Instead, their faces, biosculpted to be as beautiful as their bodies, gazed back at him impassively. Tonight's music was chosen by the chairman. He beckoned. Gracefully, yet with a severity imposed by the weapons, four and seven stepped out of the circumference into the circle. In practice, they danced naked but for wrist, elbow, and knee guards, but here, in formal performance, with someone certainly watching from behind the curtain, four wore the small metallic-scaled breast medallions, the pleated metallic-scaled skirt that hung from her hips, and swirled when she moved. Seven wore the loincloth that was hardly more than a codpiece strapped in place. The blades were all steel, but coated to match the dancer's colors. Hastite's blade alone was not steel, but true obsidian, brittle, but sharper than any other. Hastite worried a little about Four. This was her first performance in the Grand, and though she had seemed completely solid in rehearsal, he knew that the excitement of a first performance could cause a fatal misstep. Pellin should have had another half year in the second company, but she was very talented and very dedicated, the best of the understudies. Hastite hoped she would not be marked badly tonight. Hastite signaled for the pairs next. One and five would dance alone at the end, but for now joined four and seven. Hastite worried again about four. She must be shown to be inferior without injuring five or being too badly hurt. Again, he was reassured by her steady, even rhythm under the spectacular moves required. The few thin lines of red on her skin were only enhancements, not serious injuries that would take time from her training or performance. The dance continued, with the other pairs replacing those, two and eight opposing six and three. Here, where Hastite expected no problems, six missed his footing in a turn. Perhaps the floor was sweat slick there, or perhaps he lost concentration. Whatever the reason, his left foot slid sideways as his weight came on it, and two, they were the second figure by then, opened his leg across the knee from the lateral thigh to the posterior calf, exposing bone at the joint, just before the gush of brilliant blood that proved an artery had been severed. Hastite ignored the crowd and gestured to his dancers. Three and eight moved aside without missing a beat. Two backed away and knelt, weapon outstretched. Hastite looked at the chairs box. A hand outstretched. The dancers stopped, held their poses. Silence. Then six lay where he had fallen, in a widening pool of blood, struggling not to make a sound. Hastite knew already it was a crippling blow. He might live and walk, but he would never dance again. even if the joint held.
Still, our thanks for your service. It is ended.
Before anyone else could move, Hostite moved, his obsidian blade slicing through the air and Six's throat. He bowed to the chair's box.
Continue.
Hostite returned to his place. Two still knelt, having no partner. Three and Eight moved with the music, dancing, avoiding both Two and the dangerous bright blood. It honored the honorable dead to dance before them, around them. At the end of that figure, the chair gestured again. Now Hostite closed the dead eyes and made the gestures and said the words that sent Six's soul on its way. Servants came, rolled the body into a sling, and carried it out. Others cleaned and dried the floor. Afterward, in the dancers' hall, they all knelt to honor the memory of Steel, and with the edge of a keen blade, each added a drop of his or her own blood to the winding sheet. Pellin looked pale, and no wonder after such a first night. Hostite gave her a hug and held her until her body quit shivering.
You did well. You did very well.
Gunnar Tarakian and Basil Tarakian Junos had the combined investigative skills of any newshound in history and more than three times the discretion. Their profits came not from revealing information, but concealing it. It had not taken them over long to figure out that the drunk who'd accosted them back on Zenebra Main Station had been a New Texas God-fearing militia member, and that the New Texans, as the Tarakians privately referred to them, as opposed to the Texans of the Lone Star Confederation, who were perfectly respectable, if unfailingly sneaky at doing business, were engaged in terrorism against the Familius Regnant. Since Gunnar and Basil had reported to their respective fathers as soon as they were back aboard Tarakian ships, the Tarakian family had a head start on the Familius Regnant's fleet when it came to planning. They had followed, from a discreet distance, every evidence of Fleet's rescue of Brun Meager, and the more obvious evidence of her father's mental instability. Now Gunnar and Basil had met again, this time on the family's private resort on Cascadar. Their distant cousin Kaim, the only family member presently serving in Fleet, had taken leave due and was now sprawled on a couch on the wide veranda of Seabreeze, glaring at the rain that poured steadily, as if from a vat overhead.
My only leave in 4 years, and it has to be raining.
It's just the autumn rains.
I hate planets.
Gunnar glanced at Basil, who shrugged. He looked almost as sulky as Kaim.
You chose the time. You know about the climate.
I know more than that. Listen, what have you heard about the rejuvenations going bad?
Well, there was always that story that the Patchcock-made stuff was tainted somehow. A benignity plot, I heard, with a spy found right in the factory, wasn't it?
No, that's just bad drugs.
Kaim waved aside what had been 27% of the market share, and the disgrace and financial ruin of a family with more than a dozen seats in council, as if it were nothing.
What I have is evidence that the primary process may be faulty. Nothing hard yet. They're still blaming it all on something wrong with that batch of drugs. But according to my sources, some of the first repeat rejuvenates are showing mental deterioration. Lord Thornbuckle, for example.
I don't see that. She was his daughter. There's nothing induced in his reaction.
I know. I'm not a parent. But still, risking the security of the entire family.
Thing is, if it's a matter of some drugs being bad, that's very different from the process itself being flawed. Kaim, haven't some of the fleet's senior officers been rejuved?
Yes, but only once. None of them had multiples, unless one of them's had it done privately, though not through medical branch. All the first ones were volunteers done 40 or more years ago, when there had been enough civilian experience. It wasn't made standard with flag rank for another 20 years. Then they started giving senior NCOs a rejuve about 10 years ago.
So, seen any crazy admirals lately?
There's always Lepescu.
He was born mean. That kind existed before rejuve.
Yes, I know that. Look, this is still very, very classified.
Yeah, right.
Basil crossed his heart elaborately.
It's not the admirals. At least I haven't seen any crazy admirals. Not that I see that many. But there's a medical directive out on senior NCOs. Anyone rejuved in the past 10 years is being called in for immediate evaluation. And I have solid data that at least 8 Master Chiefs have had negative performance evals in our sector alone in the past half-standard year.
Sounds like a bad drug batch to me.
But it could also be intentional. If someone wanted to ruin Fleet, making Master Chiefs nuts would be a very good way to go.
And who would be doing this? Who would have access?
Across the whole organization, if it is that widespread, it would have to be sabotage in procurement or upstream from them. Another traitor.
All organizations have some traitors.
Yes, but what the NCOs are worried about is that it was a plot to start with, so that they could justify not giving rejuve to enlisted personnel. I don't see that myself. Admirals cost more and do less. Everybody knows the senior NCOs are more valuable. But it's spooking them. And having them spooked would suit our enemies. The Benignity? I can see them doing something like this through agents of theirs. Fleet Brass is worried about more traitors in the operational end, like Garavay and Hearn, but why wouldn't the Benignity suborn procurement as well?
I suppose. So either they're going to find out it was a bad batch, and the price of any remaining Moraline Consuline stock will drop through the floor, and the whole Combine will be bankrupt, or they'll find the basic process is flawed, and all rejuve-related products will go down.
Ah, you lot! Is profit all you care about? Doesn't it mean anything to you that if all the Master Chiefs go bonkers, we can't possibly stand against a Benignity or New Tex invasion?
New Texans are amateurs. That silly drunk.
Isn't the whole story. Just as you said, any organization has its traitors, and any organization also has fools that get drunk.
Still, I do not see that finding your traitors, assuming you have them, is our responsibility. We do, on the other hand, have a responsibility to the family which, by paying taxes, pays your salary too, Cain. So I wouldn't be so smug about your moral purity.
Stop it, both of you. None of us wants to see the Familias fall to invasion, and none of us wants to see the Tarakian family go broke. We're one blood.
Which might, in a few minutes, be mingled on the porch floor if the other two didn't quit posturing. Basil's daughter burst through the door from the dining room, leading her mother by a good 10 feet.
Daddy, found you!
Basil scooped her up, and the child flashed a wide grin at the other men.
Lunchtime!
Gunnar pushed himself up.
Sounds good to me. Come here, little one, and let your father get up.
The child bounced from her father's lap to Gunnar, and he lifted her slight weight to his shoulder.
Don't forget to
duck.
Inside, her mother shook her head.
Oh, sorry, Gunnar. Lydia's John had put something down the toilet in the children's bathroom, and we were coping with the overflow. Jesse got away from us.
Good timing.
Berish was almost as pretty as little Jesse, and Gunnar envied Basil at times like this, remembering those first years of marriage when the children were sweet lumps of brown sugar and a wife was an inexhaustible cavern of enchantments. He'd thought of remarrying, but the pain of losing Sela and the children still stabbed. He could not risk that again. He swung Jesse down and followed the others to the great dining table.